Hello, hi, this is Nisha here. So I have a whole bunch of podcasts in my head to record, and I'm not sure where they're going to end up, so I'm just going to record them and see where they land. So the first one is on this idea of the World Happiness Index that kind of raises its head every year. And I think this year for me, it was particularly striking because Israel was fifth on the list of world happiest countries. The vast majority of the countries in the top 10 all have compulsory military service. And for me, I think one of the conversations that you should be starting to have in your head is the fact that the Israeli state has never felt in a sense of secureness or security. And the way that they go about achieving that is by having an indoctrination and a very active military presence. And people are starting to see the impacts of that and the horrors of it. And in the past, I've also spoken about how controlled many of the countries are in the happiness index, that there's a great deal of written and unwritten rules to living in those societies. I encourage you to read the book on living Danishly for a year and just what it's like to move to Denmark and suddenly find that everything that you do is wrong. It's not the right thing to do. It's an incredibly controlled society. And so there's a sense that we seem happier as humans when someone is telling us what to do, when there's a predictability to our existence. There's a military presence to offer us security. And I find that quite terrifying. And I certainly wouldn't be happy living in any of those countries. And one of the outliers to this is Iceland, that I think was second on the list. And I always go on about this. Like, there was an arts project for a few years, a collaborative project between Ireland and Iceland. And one of the most beautiful gigs I have ever attended in Dublin City was with an Icelandic band and with a predominantly Icelandic audience. I have never been in a space with people who had such conscientious behavior and consideration to other people. It was the most beautiful experience. And that landscape is harsh. It's an interesting landscape because it's constantly changing. It still is a very volcanic landscape, but it is a harsh landscape. But yet, everything I know about Iceland is about embracing that and about fostering geothermal energy and working with the landscape. And I think if my dyslexia wasn't in the way, it would be one of those places that I would like to spend a lot of time. It's always had a draw for me, and I need to get over my language limitations in order to be able to go there. But it's quite shocking for me every time what happens when we ask people why they're happy. And I think there was an article I read that I can't find now, and it was on why Ireland has slipped 8 places in this index. I had a conversation with my dad earlier in the week after our Taoiseach resigned and how the BBC tried to really discredit Ireland and make it look like as if we're not doing well as an economy, and, you know, to present us in a very poor light in a very short space of time on television, which is kind of ironic given the backdrop of the UK at the moment, the fact that it has gone into recession, the struggles they've experienced since Brexit, the levels of the housing crisis there, including in the north of Ireland. The housing crisis is much worse than it is in the south of Ireland. There's a political climate in the UK at the moment that is slightly terrifying. if I'm honest. You know, they're talking about moving back to Thatcherism. If you need to remind yourself of what the 1980s were like in the UK and the mining strikes, the police brutality that went with that, the complete oppression of people. And then there are many maverick outliers, and the Brexit vote was a largely racist vote. And so to have the BBC come over and interview people in Ireland and tap into the propaganda machine that's taking place here for people that, you know, always impossible to find somewhere to live. The cost of living is so high. I can't ever imagine to own my own home. So many people being interviewed, oh, I'm still living at home. Like, there's some big shame around that. And the reality is that there's far more owner-occupied property in this country than there is in many other parts of Europe. The standard of living is exceptionally high. There is a poverty gap, which is expanding and doesn't need to be expanding. There are people making money on other people's misery. But as a society since the pandemic, this article that I just can't find, and it's like as if I imagined reading it, you know, is talking about how we haven't come out the other side of the pandemic, how we haven't rebooted our sense of possibility and happiness. And I would agree with that, because as a society, 60% of our society is highly social, and it really needs to socialize. And the greatest injustice for people during the pandemic was the pubs being closed. And that, I'm going to go into this in another podcast about the perception outside of what is being Irish. But that wasn't about drink. That was about socialization. And there were so many ways that people didn't meet up, didn't call to each other's houses. There is a huge generation gap happening in this country at the moment. And every time I go to a funeral of an older person, the part that dies for me is that Irishness of dropping in. The pandemic has really brought another level to that, and a level to us getting used to not going out. Yet there are all of the takeaways and the Deliveroo people, and there's been a massive escalation in that, which actually Paris City banned that because they saw the impact on the hospitality sector. They said, we can't compete with this, and it's not right. And I really wish we would bring in some legislation in this country and say it's not right, because our hospitality sector is struggling to compete with that. And I find it part insanity to sit in a cafe at 11 o'clock in the morning in the city centre that's empty, and to have Deliveroo people turning up with orders to bring to people's houses and bring to people's homes. And I'm kind of like, what happened to you going out? What happened to you supporting each other and those nominal interactions that you're not having in public spaces? So that has had a big impact on where our psyche is at, and at our happiness level and our engagement level. And in this sort of generational gap between isolated older people that are not having engagement in society, seeing so much shut around them, and a younger society that are living in a way and using their resources in a way that's not sustainable for the economy and not sustainable for their own well-being. And then there's a propaganda machine being built by certain political parties in that, oh, it's impossible to do anything or to get ahead or to be anything. And I know people who've done this and who've made this journey. Nearly all of the people who have worked with me and thought with me since I started my school 15 years ago, nearly all of them own their own homes. And they've done this during the time where we've been told as a society that you can't do this. And then there's another part that comes to me with this. And I recorded a podcast at the start of this conversation at least 7 years ago, and I said, you know, what's wrong with communal living? I recorded this the other side of the pandemic, and I was like, what's wrong with communal living? Is that what's wrong with living at home? Many people did that. Many societies and cultures do that. And we're watching on the television at the moment, we're watching a society communally living in tents, in very difficult circumstances, and still embracing and celebrating that for Ramadan. And it's like you can't live in a home and care about the generation older than you and feel that you're living with all the mod cons and move on with your life. And it's kind of like, well, why do you feel like that? Is that because as a society, we don't embrace communal living and we don't embrace people growing into adulthood and having their own lives and morphing and changing with that? Have we moved so much to individual living? And many of those people, to go back to this top of the happiness index, most of those countries on that index promote single occupancy or single generational occupancy living as well. They have completely moved away from communal living. And there's so much to benefit in that. There's so much to benefit in generations being exposed to each other. Like, it was quite normal for families to have their grandparents integrated into them. And as a society in Ireland that needs socialization, why are we comparing ourselves to countries that don't have the personalities that need that? It's like as if we're severing a deep need within ourselves to meet some other society's expectation of happiness. And we're allowing people to come in here and build a propaganda around it. We're allowing a corporate structure to come in here and take us away from our own identity and our own values that we don't seem to have rebooted the other side of the pandemic. And it's like, as a society, we actually need legislation and we need help to rejuvenate our cities and make them multi-generational. To encourage people to leave their own homes and put down their food ordering apps, to actually support their society again, to be part of it. It's like we need someone to tell us how to actually live and how to be. And like, and yet, whenever I go out, people will talk to me, but they are of an older generation. If you get on the train, if you're standing waiting for the train or the bus, or you go into a cafe space, or you go out for a walk, those people that say hello to you, those people that are seeking engagement, are always older than me. I find that incredibly sad. I find it very sad that the younger people that move into areas don't know how to say hello to you when you're going out for a walk. And yet, they're so unhappy. And there is, that is one of the things that's been shown in the happiness index, that there's a big discrepancy in happiness levels across generations. And it's like they haven't asked themselves, what are you racing towards? Or what basic things are you not doing every day? As simple as having a conversation with the person in the supermarket at the checkout. Like, it's quite striking to me. And it's like, it seems part insanity that the majority of people on that list, and like, it seems so striking to me at where Israel is at and the generational trauma and sheer damage to their sense of secureness at the moment. And they can be so high on that happiness index. And that's like what we're watching unfold is not something new. That's a sense that's been building for 75 years. A sense of need for an army, the biggest one in your region, to dictate your safety. And yet you're telling me that that can equate to happiness?